This is Kathy returning with the second half of the Herald and Review for June the 9th. Today is Thursday. We'll start out with the National History Bee is the present challenge from Valerie Wells from Aroa. The National History Bee being held in Chicago this weekend will have some Central Illinois representation. Several students from Aroa Forsyth schools will be there. The first step is a school-wide test, and then they pick the top three or so winners, said Aiden Lee, 14, who will be a freshman at Aroa Forsyth High School in August. Everyone in 5th through 8th grade participates in that school-wide test, and those who do well take an online test and then go to a qualifying regional contest, which was in St. Louis this year. Aiden's family had a vacation planned during that test, so he went to Tennessee to qualify for nationals. It was fun, said Roman King, also a soon-to-be freshman, 14. A year ago, I never imagined I would have been in this situation in the first place. All of a sudden, I realized I could start doing this. I've always been a history buff, even before this started. The History Bee is an individual competition, and high school students take part in a history bowl with teams. Unlike the National Spelling Bee, participants in the History Bee don't have a list of facts or even eras to memorize. Aiden said the questions cover a broad range of topics in the United States history, and to prepare, all students can do is make sure they've read and studied enough to have a good grounding in general history knowledge. The History Bee website offers study guides. Fifth grader Logan Parker has made liberal use of those and of the practice tests on the site as well. The 11-year-old has always been fond of history. I was already pretty good at history, he said. It was just finding any history information I could find through the internet and books and anything. I read, Roman said. Reading has really helped my history knowledge grow, and that's how I've been preparing. His favorite book for growing that knowledge is The Dictionary of Cultural Literacy, some 600 pages that he says is not a fun read. I'd like to think I can go in there and win, and obviously there will be people from all over the nation. The smartest people from all over, Roman said. I'm going to have a hard time, but I like to think I can win. He's made it to regionals in the past, but never qualified for nationals before and admits he's a bit nervous. The way I'm studying is I'm trying to live my life as normal as I possibly can, Roman said. Instead of watching TV, I'll grab a book and read that. I don't want to psych myself out and spend all my time in my room reading. If I don't have anything else to do, I'll pull up a study guide and look at it. Road work expected ahead of wind farm project by Ryan Voiles. The Macon County Board could soon pave the way for road work to be done at the site of the proposed wind farm in the northern part of the county. A road use agreement between the county and the Twin Forks Wind Farm, the subsidiary of German-based power company EON, who will oversee the plan, will come to the board during its Thursday night meeting. The road work should be done to prepare for the potential construction of 139 wind turbines and the subsequent maintenance. Upgrades to the roads, which include reinforcing them to handle heavy loads, widened lane corners, and installation of cabling and facilities for the wind farm, must be done before work begins on the turbines, according to the agreement. The cost for the work is to be determined, as bids have yet to be sent out for contractors, subcontractors, and material suppliers. The plan has already been unanimously approved by the county's Finance and Transportation Committee. Potential roadwork is expected to be done despite a standing lawsuit against the county by residents who live near the proposed wind farm location. Arguments are set to be heard in that case on June 22nd at the Macon County Courthouse. In other business, the board is expected to approve a memorandum of understanding among the Federal Highway Administration, Illinois Department of Transportation, Macon County, and the Illinois State Historical Preservation Officer that would investigate sites of potential historical relevance. The memorandum would allow additional archaeological surveys and test excavation on 9 archaeological sites that represent historic Native American and Euro-American to determine whether the site would be eligible for the National Register of Historic Places. If any sites are deemed eligible, the multiple agencies would then attempt to avoid and minimize potential impact. If impact cannot be avoided, then a data recovery excavation would be conducted by IDOT. No timeline has been given for the plan, which was previously approved by the Macon County Finance Committee, but highway officials have said it is one of the last steps before construction can begin. State schools trim phys ed. Data released by the Illinois State Board of Education show many schools in the state have cut back on days of physical education on class schedules. Nearly 1,200 Illinois schools have been trimming the number of physical education days, frequently saying they don't have facilities or staff to have the courses daily, which is required by state law. Of the roughly 3,100 schools that reported, slightly over 60% said they had 5 days a week of physical education. Not all districts reported in the manner asked by the state, while some didn't report. State Board of Education spokeswoman Lane Evans said the agency doesn't have plans to sanction school districts regarding physical education. There's a focus from the State Board of Education on working with districts to gather information on physical education. Going forward, if a district fails to submit this information, more severe consequences will be considered, Evans said. Governor Bruce Rauner has said that he wants to lift the daily physical education requirement for schools. For many school districts, lessened physical education time has come partly because hundreds of waivers in the physical education law have gotten the approval of Illinois legislators over the years. State Board of Education records show that Chicago Public Schools has received at least 4 such waivers, with the last expiring in 2014. Round Lake Community Unit School District 116 for several years had permission to have students in 1st through 6th grades have physical education every other day in the school week due to inadequate facilities. The waiver expired in 2014, and the Lake County District wasn't able to give those children daily physical education, citing circumstances such as academics and lack of space. Because of the expiration of waivers in many districts, just a few dozen school districts currently have state approval to cut days of physical education. Some looking to profit from free tickets to Ali services. From Louisville, Muhammad Ali, who long ago began crafting the plan for his final tribute, insisted the tickets for his memorial service be free. But on Wednesday, after the tickets were handed out, some people looked to make a profit. People started arriving outside the KFC Yum Center in Louisville late Tuesday, hours ahead of the ticket distribution. The line stretched around the arena. Thousands of tickets for Ali's memorial service Friday were claimed on a first-come, first-served basis in about an hour. When told of the enormous line, Ali's wife Lonnie laughed and said, "Muhammad is directing all of this and he's enjoying every minute of it," Ali family spokesman Bob Gunnell said. Many fans of the boxing great flashed smiles, chanted Ali's name, and some danced upon getting their 4 ticket allotment to be part of history. Thousands of others left empty-handed. Given the supply and demand factor for about 15,000 seats in the arena, some ticket holders immediately looked to cash in, going online offering to sell theirs to the star-studded event. Former President Bill Clinton, a longtime Ali friend, will eulogize the champ, who died last Friday at 74 following a long battle with Parkinson's disease. Gunnell denounced the profiteering as a despicable act that's illegal. "It is deplorable that some people are trying to profit off of the solemn service as we celebrate the life of Muhammad Ali," he said. Gunnell warned that officials were monitoring the online advertisements. Ticket scalping in Kentucky, defined as selling a ticket for more than its face value, is a violation, punishable by a fine of up to $250. "I hope that those buying tickets or trying to buy tickets would stop those efforts by not purchasing," Gunnell added. Muhammad Ali wanted this to be a free event, an event that was open to all. One of the posters offering to sell tickets, when reached by phone, said a friend of his sold tickets to the memorial service. When asked for how much, he hung up. Others posted online pleas to buy tickets. One wrote that he and his mother were driving in from Chicago to the service and were willing to pay $50 for 2 tickets. Another wrote that he was flying in from California for the service and offered to pay someone $50 to stand in line for him for tickets to both the memorial service and the janazah, a traditional Muslim funeral being held Thursday in Louisville. But others, unable to wait in line, refused to pay for tickets to the event. Ali insisted it should be free. "The greatest wanted his funeral to be accessible to everyone instead of the money-hungry spectacle that will be taking place on Friday," one wrote in, requesting someone give him tickets for free. "R.I.P. Muhammad Ali, the greatest of all time." Another poster wanted to sell tickets to the funeral. Thousands of free tickets were distributed this week for that event. Basit Muhammad went online in hopes of finding someone willing to part with their tickets at no cost to the janazah prayer. At first, the 22-year-old from Virginia said he heard from several people willing to sell their tickets. He turned them down. "I think it's wrong," Muhammad said. "It's not how you commemorate someone, by making money off their death." Eventually, someone from the Louisville area contacted him with word that 4 tickets were available for free. "I'm glad that somebody has a heart out there," Muhammad said. Muhammad planned to head out for Louisville on Wednesday with 3 friends to pay tribute to the 3-time heavyweight champion and humanitarian. When will I ever have a chance to attend the funeral of someone that meant a lot to Islam and to our country, he said. Wambacher tramps through MMA's Underground to the Top by Bill Welt. Bobby Wambacher's first day inside the octagon was unforgettable. Then living in Salt Lake City, Utah, he was slated to judge a local mixed martial arts fight. But his phone buzzed on the drive there. They needed a ref. The Taylorville native was stunned, but he was not totally unprepared. He always carried a uniform just in case. Still, he was wired up. I remember throwing up before the first fight because I was nervous as heck, Wambacher said. It was a hell of a moment because then you got everything going through your head. Is this right? Is that right? Obviously, you're never prepared for that moment. There's so much you have to do to get the fighters safe at all times. That was crazy. Back in October 2012, that was the launch of his officiating career. He supervised more than 1,500 fights in 17 states and two tribal nations since then, and he's going to make another step up the MMA ladder on July 13th when he debuts on UFC Fight Night on Fox Sports 1 at the Denny Sanford Premier Center in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He's never officiated at a venue this large before. I've been to several UFCs, and the energy and electricity from the fan standpoint is unbelievable, Wambacher said. I'm highly anticipating the adrenaline. I'm looking forward to it. Wambacher, who now lives in Decatur, hopped into MMA on a whim, but he was all in from the start. He initially trained to be an MMA fighter at Jeremy Horn's gym when he first moved to Salt Lake City with his family. I watched it like everybody else, Wambacher said. I thought I could fight. He didn't stop his rigorous training after a crippling shoulder injury. He turned his sights on officiating instead. It was going to put me out for 5 to 6 months, and I just didn't want to sit and do nothing, Wambacher said. I thought, what could I do to stay involved? I got involved with reffing, and I haven't looked back. Referees have to be trained fighters to adequately understand the sport and its endless scenarios. They also have to train at different gyms to eliminate bias. Then comes the Association of Boxing Commission certification test, which requires writing and demonstration. Wambacher failed his first attempt, and most do, but passed his second in June of 2012. Our job is obviously fighter safety, Wambacher said. If you disengage it improperly, you can damage the fighter's joint or something more severely. You just got to make sure you know what you're doing and know how to do it. He still takes classes and has obtained 7 certifications. You see something new every time, Wambacher said. The point you think you've learned everything, you should retire because you don't know what you're doing at that point. Every event, there's something new. It's nearly as demanding as being a fighter, and the price tag is perhaps steeper than Wambacher ever imagined. He roamed all over the country for fights. He averaged 65,000 miles each year, and in 1 year spent almost 45 weekends away from home. Even more remarkable, this is only an avocation. He's worked for Firestone all of that time and is currently store manager of Decatur's Firestone Complete Auto Care on Main Street. You certainly don't do it for the money, Wambacher said of being an official. He said it also took a toll on his first marriage and led to a divorce. His 5 children still reside in Utah. It certainly contributed to the downfall, being gone every weekend, Wambacher said. You've got to have more of a balance. I did not have a balance. I was very focused on improving, but I think you can absolutely have a balance. If I were to do it over again, there's certainly a balance I would find to make it better. Of course, he's literally taken hits. That includes a broken thumb, a pulled shoulder, and twisted knees and ankles. Refereeing is very physical, Wambacher said. Whenever someone gets knocked out or is hurt, you have to go in there and stop the fight because the other fighter doesn't automatically stop punching. They're still swinging or kicking. Every time you go in to stop a fight, you're putting yourself in a position to get hit, and you know what's going on. Usually after every fight, you have some little injury because your job is to protect the fighter. That means throwing yourself in harm's way sometimes. Wambacher is more than big enough to handle it at 5'10" and 195 pounds, and his dedication is unwavering. In fact, he engages with more than 2,500 fans on his Facebook page, MMA referee Bobby Wambacher, and it's led him to one of the biggest stages with UFC. Very few referees ever get the chance. Wambacher said it's like being promoted from the minors to the majors. All those others are important, and I love doing them, Wambacher said, but this is what you strive for, to get to the UFC. And now turning to the obituaries. Bruckner, Arthur, from Decatur. Arthur Pierce Bruckner, 83, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, May 28, 2016. Graveside services will be at 9:30 a.m. in Graceland Cemetery and conclude with military honors. A celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 11th, at the First Presbyterian Church, 204 West Prairie Avenue in Decatur. Gathering will follow after the memorial service at 11:45. Memorials are suggested to the First Presbyterian Church or the donor's choice. Cipinieri Thomas William from Decatur. Thomas William Cipinieri, 71, of Decatur, died at 4:14 a.m. Sunday, June 5, 2016, in his residence. According to Mr. Cipinieri's wishes, there will be no services. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to Thomas Cipinieri's family. Tanzius Logan Funeral Services and Care is assisting the family with these arrangements. Crawford Mose J. from Decatur. Mose J. Crawford Janelle of Decatur died Monday, May 30, 2016. Services will be held on Thursday, June 9th at Walker Funeral Service and Chapel, 566 North Water Street in Decatur. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. with a period of reflection at 12 noon. Burial in Tiptonville, Tennessee. Minor Guy from Decatur. Guy Minor, Lil Buddy, 79, of Decatur, departed this life on Saturday, June 4th at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services celebrating his life will be held Saturday, June 11th, with visitation from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Family processional begins at 11:30 a.m. with funeral service to follow at 12 p.m. Professional services have been entrusted to the Walker Funeral Service. Grieve Carol M. from Decatur. Carol M. Grieve, 69, of Decatur, retired from Archer Daniels Midland Company, died Sunday, June 5th. There will be no services. The body will be cremated. Johnson, Betty L. from Decatur. Betty L. Johnson, 66, of Decatur, passed away Tuesday, June 7th, in her home with her family by her side. Services to celebrate Betty's life will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, June 11th, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 12 to 1 p.m. prior to the services at the funeral home. Burial will follow at the Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois. Peterson Prudence Joe. Prudence Joe Peterson, 73, also known as Miss PJ by her family and friends and students at Robertson Charter School, passed at 3:33 p.m. on Monday, June 6, surrounded by her immediate family. A celebration of Prudence's life will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, June 10th, in the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Friday in the funeral home. Memorials are suggested to RETT Syndrome Research or Cancer Research. And those are all the obituaries that are listed in the Herald and Review for today. And from Dear Abby today. Dear Abby, I'm writing about your answer to an international educator who asked about translators at parent-teacher conferences. Your answer was only partially correct. I am a professional interpreter and translator. First, I should note that translators do written work, interpreters speak aloud. Different skills are involved, which is why there are different terms. Second, during interpretation, the interpreter is not considered to be a part of the conversation, just a conduit through which communication takes place. Persons being interpreted for do not need to look at the interpreter while facilitating their communication. A professional interpreter will interpret everything that is said. For example, they will not leave out curse words or filter or embellish anything. They also try to approximate the same voice tone. I should also note that professional interpreters are bound by privacy codes, much like doctors and nurses. We are not allowed to divulge any information we have learned from our interpretation jobs. Another thing to realize is that a professional interpreter or a translator will be completely neutral, regardless of who hired him or her, or with which party he or she enters the room. If someone is using a non-professional interpreter, a person who just happens to know both languages but has not had the training to be an interpreter, he or she may not adhere to these privacy or conduct codes, and their interpretations may not be of the best quality. Just knowing two languages does not guarantee that someone is capable of doing accurate interpretations. The same thing goes for translations. Signed, One Who Knows in Kansas. And Abby responded, "Thank you for clarifying the difference between the two terms. You are one of many readers who wrote to explain it, and I'm glad you did." And the second question, Dear Abby, please tell your readers that even though gay people are more integrated into our lives, it does not provide an open invitation to pry into anyone's sexual practices. I have been asked many times about the physical mechanics of my relationship, although I would never consider requesting such information from my heterosexual friends, neighbors, or coworkers. I think the bottom line should be, keep your noses out of your friends' bedrooms and everything will be just fine. I am a gay 49-year-old man in Texas and honestly would never dream of asking any couple, straight or gay, what they do when they are alone. It bothers me that some people think being accepted means I welcome those kinds of questions. And Abby answers, there is no end to nosy and intrusive questions people with poor judgment will ask. However, there is a standard response that may resolve your problem. If you say it with a smile, it's, if you'll forgive me for not answering that question, I'll forgive you for not asking. I'll forgive you for asking. Good answer. And here's an interesting article from Sullivan. Shrek starts the little theater season strong. If you like live theater and if you ever go down to Sullivan, this isn't a good place to go. By Danette Beckett. When a stage show can calm rambunctious children, it must be doing something right. Little Theater on the Square's production of Shrek the Musical was promoted as a family show. Parents and grandparents, along with their children, filled the seats during the first afternoon performance last week. The excitement of the season's first show and the time of day was a good mix for families with small children. Older members of the audience may have worried this might be a distraction, but the Little Theater's performance calmed everyone in the theater. The show lived up to the expectations of a big production. Each act began with a high-energy production, leaving the audience, young and old, laughing or wanting to dance along. For most of the musical, the cast did their best to entertain both senior citizens and toddlers. Although there were a few moments of adult humor, the colorful and energetic show worked well for the kids, too. Those familiar with the 2001 DreamWorks animated movie Shrek would not be surprised by the amount of bodily gases and subtle inappropriate words. Unlike the movie, Little Theater production stressed the moral stand of accepting others with their flaws. We are different, they sang in the song Freak Flag. This is our story. The musical gives the audience a small peek into Shrek's past. A storybook opens with his parents sending him out into the world at 7 years old. Great things will happen, his mother said to him, but not for you. Keeping with the Little Theater tradition, the music and dancing were at a professional level. What proved to be the most impressive was the amount of actors playing multiple characters. If you were watching closely, you could see actor John Cardenas on stage as Peter Pan in one scene, then as a guard in the next, and as a dancer shortly afterward. The audience could only match other characters and actors by following the playbill. Jamie Finkenthal not only changed costumes, but voices as Mama Ogre and as the dragon. Because of the tricky positions and costumes of the characters, many had to alter their natural movements. Prosthetics were a common part of the costume, such as deformed noses and enlarged hind legs. The shortened stature of Lord Farquaad was the most impressive. When fully extended to his natural height, actor Nicholas Carroll is well over 6 feet tall. Throughout the play, he walked on his knees with a cape covering the rest of his legs. We all knew his legs were hidden, but we still enjoyed the way he walked across the stage. Director Therese Kincaid understood fans of the movie will have expectations. To keep us happy, many of the actors stayed close to the original actors' voices. John Gurdian kept Shrek's Scottish accent. Corbin Williams stayed with a high-pitched, raspy voice of Pinocchio. On the other hand, Donkey, played by Rakim Lawrence, was no Eddie Murphy. He was much more animated than the cartoon Donkey, to the audience's delight. Shrek the Musical continues throughout the weekend with every fairy tale character and a few extras represented. With the amount of talent on the Little Theater stage this summer, variety can be expected. If the energy and size of Shrek is a preview of the Little Theater summer season, all audiences will have a good time, even the little children. And another article about the Sullivan Theater. Early 1960s musical revival at Little Theater. The funny side of corporate America can be seen on stage during the 1962 Pulitzer Prize-winning musical, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. The summer cast of the Little Theater on the Square will be performing the elaborate show from June 15th through the 26th. The story follows a new employee, J. Pierpont Finch, trying to climb the corporate ladder. He reads the book, How to Succeed in Business, to make the feat simpler and quicker. The bosses he must contend with think they are the ones running the company and in control. It makes fun of all these executives, Director Ashton Byram said. The guys are still teenage boys in suits chasing girls around. According to the director, the show views the office situations as cool yet humorous. To be able to tell a love story, a competition story, and a story about a man trying to make something of his life is a lot of fun. He said, "We can all understand ambition and going for something important." Although the play was written in the 1960s, the situations can still be seen in many offices today. During the musical number Coffee Break, the office staff addresses the need of the popular beverage. "If I can't take my coffee break, something within me dies," the cast sings. All the situations that workers are put in, like needing coffee or having a boss you know is not as smart as you, everyone can relate to, said Corbin Williams, who plays Finch. The race up the corporate ladder is often filled with competition and nepotism. The fight to the top between Finch and the boss's nephew, Bud Frump, only adds to the show's humor. "He really has no place working in the company at all," actor Jordan Seifert said, "but because he talks to Mommy, he always gets his way." Choreographer Megan Farley keeps many of the moves popular from the 1960s. "It is very jazzy with a few nods to choreographer Bob Fosse," she said. Farley has a huge cast of men dancing in the production, including Gus Gordon. Gordon has performed on the Little Theater stage in the past, including in last year's Hairspray as Edna Turnblad. "This year I get to wear pants again," he said. His How to Succeed character will also be a challenge. He will also be dancing in the large productions as the top executive for the company, J.B. Bigley. "I call him just a suit because there's a lot of substance to the guys," Gordon said. "That's part of the humor. No one really knows what the other person is doing. The secretaries are the ones who really run the whole outfit." Finch's love interest, Rosemary Pilkington, played by Sidney Troxler, brings a modern touch to the pre-Women's Lib show. "She knows what she wants and isn't afraid to talk to these guys. She tells them how it is," Troxler said. "But it's okay to want to have a husband." How to Succeed was chosen to add variety to the season. "It's different than the first show, Shrek, with all the color," Byram said. "There's a slickness to this show with corporate steel and glass." And this little tidbit from Copenhagen, Denmark. The museum removes colonial terminology from collection. The National Gallery of Denmark has replaced the word Negro with African in titles and descriptions of artworks in an effort to remove colonial terminology from its collection. Museum Deputy Director Peter Norgard Larsen said Tuesday that the language change affected 14 works by Danish painters from 1609 to 1959. He said the downtown Copenhagen Museum was inspired by a similar move last year by the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. The change prompted criticism from the Nationalist Danish People's Party, a government ally which accused the museum of trying to rewrite history. "Suddenly they want to remove these terms from their own history, so they want to whitewash their own history, which is a totalitarian mindset," said Alex Andresen, the party's spokesman for cultural affairs. While Denmark was never a major colonial power, it held small colonies and trading stations in the Caribbean, Africa, and Asia. Like bigger European countries, it participated in the slave trade. Camilla Mordhorst, a spokeswoman for Denmark's National Museum, another museum in Copenhagen, told the Politiken newspaper it would keep colonial terms in its collection because they describe an inequality between people that is part of the story. At the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam, spokeswoman Jacobin Schneider said the original names of paintings are saved in the museum's archives because this is also a part of history. And this is Kathy signing off for today. This has been the second half of the Herald and Review. I hope you enjoyed the reading today. We will be back with you tomorrow. Thanks.